All right, there we go. We are live on the air, Kawhi Soapbox Live, with Eric Cannon and Carlos.
I'm just the producer today.
All right.
No, we're actually, Felicia had an opportunity to spend Thanksgiving with some family on the mainland, so we're covering her show today. So Felicia will be back next Tuesday for you Felicia fans who have been waiting the last 6 months for her to get back on here, but... lots of stuff on the air tonight. Eric's sitting in the control chair, so he's going to be running the show. I've got the phones, 826-7771. We got a little station business, and we will be back after this. But before we begin, you are listening to...
KKCR, Kawhi Soapbox Live, KQA 98.
Right over there.
Oh, there it is.
Right over there.
I'm just reciting it off the top of my mind. KKCR, Honolulu, KQA, Kilauea. K224CQ Mullawa, K284AL. Let's see. What's the last one?
Oh, you'd have to read all this.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, let's see. The last part that I have to read is...
You're good.
All right, I'm good. Just making sure. So, we'll be right back after we play these messages, right?
Okay.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Al Pastor
Canvas, professional
KKCR,
gallery quality G-Clay canvas printing and digital image capture now available on Kauai. Managing print flow, stretching, and even crating. More information at 212-6971. Or online at kawaiicanvas.com. Kawaii Canvas. Stretch your imagination.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR, across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos, and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
Grow Our Own Teachers presents Amy Hanaialii Gilliam in concert, Sunday, December 7th, at the KCC Performing Arts Center. Doors open at 6 p.m. and show starts at 7. This is a fundraiser for Grow Our Own Teachers Kauai, providing financial assistance to local public school teacher candidates. That's Amy Hanaialii Gilliam in concert, Sunday, December 7th, at the KCC Performing Arts Center. General and reserve seating tickets available at outlets island-wide. More information and tickets online at growkawaiiteachers.org.
And KKCR is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with... All right, anyways. Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So... Now we are on the air live. Sorry for the bumpy starts, my first time controlling the board. But we are here for you guys. So 808-826-7771, and we are here for you to call in. I'm sure there's a lot to talk about. I know I have a lot to talk about, but we're not here to talk about me or what Carlos has to talk about. We're here for you. So before I start opening off my mouth... Let's hope the phones light up, and they did. So, let's hear what they have to say. Aloha, you are on the air. Oh, let's see. There you go. Are you there? Let's see. One moment. Aloha, you are on the air.
Okay, I can hear you. Can you hear
okay,
me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Sorry about that.
Great, thanks. This is Marge calling, and I just got back from the monthly KIUC meeting, and I thought there might be some interesting information for some of your listeners. You know, as I assume everybody knows what KIUC means, Kauai Island Utility Co-op, right?
Uh-huh.
Right, okay. So what they passed today was an amended, or not amended, but a brought-up-to-date policy number 18, which deals with who is eligible to put their name in for application for a board member for KIUC. So board elections come up in March, and the board decides who they are going to nominate, and they have three people nominated for the March elections, and anyone else in the community can apply. But the process this year is longer and a little more complicated. It involves a page and a half, actually 2.5 page candidate application form. And so I think that if anyone is interested in putting their name up to be on the slate of candidates in March, they should go online and take a look at this new policy number 18. And it probably won't be online yet until it you know, gets all typed up the right way. But that was basically the major change in that policy. And as some of you may have remembered, there was such a stew last March about the elections and the training that had to happen before people even got elected. So I think what they're trying to do is eliminate some problems, and this application form is just going to be used for 1 year, and then it's going to be evaluated as to whether or not the board wants to continue it for those members who want to apply to become a board member of KIUC. So that said, the other thing that of importance that happened at this meeting was that the State Division of Forestry and Wildlife representatives were there from Oahu, and they are planning on logging a great deal of Kokea forestry land that has been destroyed in three fires in the year 2002. 2,000 acres burned at that time.
Oh, wow.
And so they have to come up with a process for getting rid of these burned trees that are salvageable. So what they're going to do is they're going to log this area, or these three areas that got burned, of the trees that are worth anything in any way. And they're going to carry them down to the highway, down Kokea Road, on big, huge logging trucks. And then they're going to the new facility that's going to be burning green waste. I think you maybe all know about that. That got approved by the county, and it probably is not going online until next year. And then by the time that the State Division of Forestry and Wildlife get their plan together to get the logs down there, it might be another year or two after that. So apparently one of the big concerns about these logging trucks on Kokea, the road up to Kokea, is that they're going to have 12 trucks a day, and these loggers are coming from Oregon, so chances are they know what they're doing. But the trucks will be driven by local people, and that bid has not gone out yet for whatever company here on Kauai is going to be driving the trucks. So the big concern is if there's 12 trucks a day on the road to Kokea, how are they going to interact with the tour buses that come up and down all day long from the bottom to the very, very top? So just to let people know what's going on, so that if they have any interest at all in any of this wood, perhaps some people might want some of this wood, and they should contact the State Division of Forestry and Wildlife. Also, hunting will still be allowed in these areas where they're going to be logging, but only on weekends and holidays in those particular areas. And there will be a lot of notification, I'm sure, as to where those areas are.
All right. Well, I appreciate you bringing this to attention. And we have another caller waiting to get on the air right now. But if you'd like to call in again, I appreciate it.
No, I'm heading out. But one quick thing. One of the problems they're having now is they don't know what kind of herbicide to use in these areas once the trees are gone and before they plant new trees. So everybody, keep all this stuff in your heads. And if you're interested, go for it. And thanks for your program. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for calling in. Aloha.
Aloha.
All right. So, sorry, Kavika, we had you scheduled, but we got another call in front. Are you still with us?
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we got something wonderful going on tonight, and I just want to get out of the way and let you dive in, take as much time as you need, and tell us who you are, what's happening, and where people can go find it. Hello, I'm sorry, you were just breaking up there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kavika Winter from Limahuli Garden and Preserve in Haena, and we have an event going on that's sponsored by the Hawaii Conservation Alliance, which is an effort to create a venue for some of the community-based conservation initiatives to share a little bit about the work. So we have a little presentation tonight happening at Common Ground from 5:30 to 7:30.
All right. Is it a free, open to the public?
It's free and open to the public.
All right. And so what exactly will you be covering there for people that might be interested?
Well, we're going to be sharing a little bit about our work that's happening out in Haena, about how we create conservation programs that are founded in and aligned with traditional resource management philosophies and such, that we don't have to reinvent the wheel as we go out and try and do our work to prevent extinction and save the core watersheds and all that good stuff.
All right. Are you guys affiliated with anyone else? Will anyone else be out there working with you, or is it will be specifically you guys?
It's a collaborative endeavor between the Hawaii Conservation Alliance. So we have somebody from Oahu coming out to give a brief presentation, and then us as well, and we're a part of the National Tropical Botanical Garden. So it'll be the two of us giving a presentation tonight.
I'm trying to find the poster. It was such a great poster. I had it online, and then I lost the link. Is there any place online where people might be able to go look and get more information?
Yes, if you go to the Hawaii Conservation Alliance website and look at events, it should be the top event.
Okay.
The page there.
And it's at Common Ground, and what time? You must be getting ready to hit the road right now.
Yeah, I'm going to leave Haena as soon as I hang up, and it'll be from 5:30 to 7:30.
5:30 to 7:30, Common Ground. And, gosh, I wish it would have been fun to do a live remote, but we'd love to talk with you more about what happened, what you guys are doing, and maybe get you in the studio if that's possible going forward.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay. All right, thank you so much. 5:30 tonight, Common Ground. Thank you so much, Kavika.
Aloha.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, no, I didn't call to be on the air so much as to talk to you guys.
Oh, okay. I'll take you off the air, and let me see. Call right back, and you'll be off the air, and I will take you myself.
Sorry about that, caller. But anyways, for the other people out there that are listening to the radio program right now, feel free to call in at 808-826-7771. And, yeah, you're welcome to call in off the air, or you can call in on the air. I'd prefer on the air because then I get a chance to talk to you.
Go ahead, caller.
Normally I'm handling the phones and answering all those, but now I'm actually on the board, so can't talk to you unless you're on the air. But, yeah, so what's on your guys' mind? I know, as I was saying earlier, there's a lot happening right now across the world, from giant snowstorms in New York to sad shootings and people getting very angry about
the
convictions that happened afterwards.
They just left at 4:00.
But, if you guys want to talk about it, feel free to call in. But other than that, I'd have to just put on some music. In the meantime, let's see. I guess I will just start talking about him then. So, in Ferguson, Missouri, I'm sure you all heard, there was a shooting.
Oh, God,
I believe
I don't know.
It was
but,
on the
yeah.
9th. Either way, an officer shot a unarmed black male walking on his way home. And, yeah, then the body was outside on the streets for hours, and the officer was not convicted with any charges. So that was last night, and there was riots all across the country from what I saw on the news. There was riots even in New York and L.A., even though this happened in Missouri.
Okay, hold on.
So that was pretty hectic. Do we have somebody on the air?
Yeah, we have someone on the air that would like to comment on the topics that were on the Homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show regarding water quality. Go ahead, caller. Thank you so much.
That's a wacky water quality.
Too much of that. Wallaby.
Wallabies. No, wallabies, that's Kalihi Valley.
Yeah.
Anyway, no. Okay, so I worked on the pre-construction water quality. Now I can't think straight. Anyway, assessment. But they were kind of joking around, and some people got hurt. And it's like, throughout the whole process, you know, some of us were trying to share with them is that people got hurt exactly the same way the last time that they did that sand replacement.
And maybe just to catch us up, because we're a different show.
Yeah.
By hurt, do you mean people's feelings were hurt, or people actually experienced physical injuries, or maybe give a little background? Because I'm outside of the loop on that one. I apologize.
Okay, certainly both. Yeah. Over the years there in Waikiki, they've brought sand from Australia, from Molokai, from the North Shore, and this time all they did was pump sand from that by nature's hand got pushed offshore, and they use hydraulic dredging techniques and bring the sand back up on the beach for replenishment in front of the resorts.
Okay.
And the resorts were really behind this and pushing for it. At the same time, you know, generations of the Beach Boys have been telling them exactly what happens. And what happens is, you know, all that sand gets up there all at once, and then it fills in and makes shallow spots where there normally aren't shallow spots. And people have been breaking their necks.
Okay, all right.
For every time they do that. And as far as feelings being hurt, yeah, the Beach Boys are hurt every time because, you know, they tell those engineering powers that be, you know, this is what's going to happen. It happens, and then the next time, it all happens again, and the Beach Boys come. How many times do you think they, because they're a quiet bunch when it comes to dealing with the powers that be for the most part.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify, because I didn't know if you meant feelings were hurt by the topics covered on the last show or whatever. So that was not a sarcastic or facetious question. I didn't know the topic because I missed the last show from the 2 to 4. So I guess they were covering that topic. And so the feeling by the Beach Boys is what I'm maybe inferring, and if I'm wrong, correct me, is to maybe let nature do what it wants to, or what exactly? What are they calling for?
Well, nature's going to do what it's going to do, and so then they have these replenishment things. Well, number one, that also means that, you know, when the sand is offshore in those places, it's called wildlife or fish habitat.
Mm-hmm.
When it's on the beach, it's called real estate.
Okay.
Yeah, and
so would you say this is a money-driven issue by the resorts? Is that the feeling that I'm hearing?
Yeah, resort folks like to maximize their ability to develop resorts. And so they have, you know, for over 100 years been placing them much too close to the beach, which is, you know, kind of maybe going to happen on Kauai Island too, or is, or, you know, but these sand replenishment projects are broken down into smaller and smaller increments, even though they do more than one increment next to each other. So their effects actually are cumulative. And the powers that be engineering-wise, because they break them down into these smaller increments, are able to sort of fast-track them.
Okay. They don't look at the aggregate situation as a whole, and they can almost kind of hide the big picture by lots of small parts.
In a sense, yes.
Okay.
And then on top of that, is we go back to the Mother Nature thing, is that, you know, I've never been a fan of anthropomorphic sea level rise, or what some people call global warming, or climate adjustment.
By not a fan, do you mean you're a little skeptic of that human driven climate change?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm certain that there is an anthropomorphic portion to
sure.
that giant algorithm out there of what's occurring on the planet right now, but I believe that some of it has to do with solar cycles, and perhaps even larger cycles that, you know, modern science has only been keeping records for a couple hundred years, if you want to give those guys a lot more credit than some people give them. Maybe 100 years by some reckoning.
Yeah, I actually am very much on the same page as you, and the climate is driven, in my belief and from my studies of scientists. I'm not a scientist, but I do a lot of research. Humans are affecting it, but we're not the primary driver. Do we pollute, exploit, and corrupt habitats? Absolutely, and that should stop. But the humans driving the entire planetary climate change, I don't know. A lot of scientists, especially in the last 2 or 3 months, are starting to have the guts to come out, and there's been a lot of pressure to get behind the politics. First, it was global cooling. It was going to be the giant ice age. That was the 70s and 80s. Then it was global warming, and that didn't pan out. And now it's climate change, which, you know, they can interpret as they will. But a lot of scientists are actually jumping ship on that a little bit. There's a lot of theater involved, a lot of money involved, et cetera. So I'm with you on that, and I'm familiar with
yeah.
what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But bringing it back to Waikiki, so you were actually moved to call and Sharon. So how would you boil down what you would like to convey to the listeners, just to be exactly clear? Because we've talked about the sand, the real estate of more or less beach and how that affects hotel profits and the tourist experience. And then you have someone like the Beach Boys, which are, a traditional group of people that, you know, are there day in, day out, studying the ebb and flow of sand flow, sandbar formation, and, you know, how sand moves around the island in and out. So what's the bottom line for you? Because something actually made you call up.
Yeah, because those guys are my relatives, yeah.
Okay.
But me, I've had, you know, the privilege of education at land-grant universities on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
So you might call me kind of a scientist, but I believe that I have a more open, maybe ended viewpoint because of my effect by my uncles and cousins and stuff, yeah.
So would you lean toward being less active in the manipulation of the sand and beaches over there and let happen what wants to naturally happen based on geography and water flow? Is that what I'm hearing you say? To just
maybe? Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just trying to get clear.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're hearing me fairly clearly.
Okay.
And then, you know, a lot of petrochemical energy is used to run those hydraulic dredging operations and spread the sand and properly let the sand be solarized and exposed to air so that it's when you first pull the sand up, it's kind of dark gray, and that sort of reducing environment smell. Do you know what that means?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a lot of energy expended on the process too, so that if you're looking at it from like a pollution cost to air and production of petrochemicals and stuff, I think there's a significant cost there. But overall, you know, it's just like they're going to do it again and again and again and again, and it's already been three agains or four agains, and it's only going to be that, probably that many more agains into the next future of 40 years.
Well, I think what struck me from what you said, though, and maybe I'm wrong, but when you start having people that are potentially being injured by a practice that they're unaware that is directly changing an environment, and then you're inviting tourists and visitors to come in that, you know, might jump in to a place they're expecting one type of bottom, you know, underneath the water, and running into a shallower depth, breaking their neck. You know, you get lawyers involved, and there's money involved, and all of a sudden, you know, it seems like that should be maybe focused on, because there's probably going to be, aside from the moral and, you know, even spiritual issue of messing with Mother Nature, if you believe in that, you know, there's just the direct liability of somebody jumping in and breaking their neck, where maybe that wouldn't be a natural occurrence if we weren't affecting the sand. So you bring up some very interesting points.
And one of the people who was hurt this time is someone who is who seems to be experienced in the area, you know, as a lifelong visitor to that area, but then not up to speed as to what's there now that was caused by the project. You know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
And I like the bluegrass guys, and I like that they make light of certain things at times. But that's why I called, just because they're kind of, I don't think they were fully aware of what they were, you know, joking about. And people getting hurt, you know, the booze cruise guy, that, you know, that brings a chuckle to everybody. Not that he got hurt as badly as he did, but, you know, somebody falling off a booze or jumping off a booze cruise, can get hurt any time anyway.
Right.
You know, so, but it relates directly to something that you talked about, I think, on this show a couple months ago, about how somebody built a small, what I would call, barge and sort of anchored it offshore there in the Hanalei Bay. You know, that's putting us all at financial jeopardy, because if somebody gets hurt on that, then lawyers get involved and they say, oh, well, DLNR was negligent because they didn't address this situation that shouldn't really occur either. And you guys kind of made light, oh, well, it's like no big deal. Well, it is a kind of a big deal, because as soon as somebody gets hurt, then you're going to our collective deep pocket of DLNR. And yet you're kind of like making fun of the harbor master or whoever it was that was out there saying, hey, man, you just can't park this, you know, this play barge out here.
Right.
Because, you know, it puts us all in those kinds of jeopardies.
So yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
the show's not about me, and I'm not calling about me. And
well, actually, this show is exactly about you or any other listener, because we, on the Kauai Soapbox, which comes after that, we just want to hear what people are thinking, whether it's about rioting in Ferguson or, you know, the releasing, making executive moves on amnesty or stuff close to home, like Dow and Monsanto suing Maui County to try to overturn the ban. You know, it's we're just here for you. So anything. And what I heard you say was maybe there was a little glib, you know, a little sarcastic, a little humorous, but maybe it just didn't feel respectful to you. And
And along those lines, and along those other things is like, oh, I support like maybe a 60,000 uniform drawdown of the folks occupying Oahu right now, you know, our military. That would be really cool if 60,000 of them, starting with officers first, of course, packing up and bailing, you know, repatriating back to the mainland. That's not, you know, being glib or mean on my part. There's a lot of issues going on, and for us to take care of our place, it would be real cool to start with something like that, which relates to Ferguson, which relates to, you know, immigration amnesty or whatever. You know, it's not, you know, Barry's not calling it that.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, I love Barry.
Everything is connected in one way or another, and certainly, you know, I encourage people to call in if they felt like something was misrepresented or treated with anything less than respect. And some shows use humor and sarcasm. Others are hard facts. You hear the county council report, and there's just nothing but the facts, no editorializing at all. But I appreciate you calling in, bringing stuff up. You got the phones lit up, so I guess you've inspired other people to call in. And
I didn't even mean to come on air. I just wanted to talk.
I know,
to
but you did, and thank you for sharing.
Coming from. Okay, yeah. Aloha, no.
Right on.
Holy ho.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Aloha, you are on the air.
That's me.
Yep.
Who you just dropped?
Hello?
Sorry
about that. I think we accidentally dropped that one, but please call back so we can take you back on the air.
Did we just hang up on you? We got a rookie running the line, the phone. You want to go on the air? All right, hold on a second.
All right, here we go.
All right, he's on.
Carlos.
Carlos is on the air.
I'm actually just trying to run the phones today. Go ahead. What's up?
Hi, Carlos.
I think Scott just cut you off on that one.
Hi.
Okay, caller. I'm sitting way back in the back of the room here. Go ahead. Well, who's on the air? Do we have anyone?
No, we just dropped everybody.
Oh, wow.
Well, what about rookies?
Scott's in the house. I think we're doing okay, but there we go.
Okay, here we go.
I just moved over to the pure, I'm just a voice. I'm not running the board or the phone. But this is live radio. You're listening to KKCR 826-7771. And there's so many things to talk about right now, whether it's rioting in Ferguson or across the country, the amnesty move, what's happening over in Maui, your thoughts on the elections, where we're going forward, or anything at all. This show, until 6 o'clock, we are just here to literally take your phone calls, get out of the way, and let you talk. So do we have anybody?
Carlos.
Okay, we're starting over again. Eric Cannon is running the board today. He's getting his chops down. One of these days he's going to get his own show. So go ahead, caller. I know the voice, but I will
Carlos.
Not I will not identify the soft sand walker runner.
Well, it's soft sand. But in the future, okay, I can vision 4 or 5 year old learning how to run in soft sand. We're going to build a place here on Kauai where you can learn how to build sand castles, where older people will be able to have the opportunity to experience what it would feel like to be in the sand and to feel what it would feel like for the fabric to feel its natural stuff.
Okay, I got to ask a question, though. Didn't somebody already invent the beach?
Yeah, but you live in Nebraska.
Oh, you're taking the show on the road.
Take it on the road and bring it into everyone's backyard.
because you're not going to send a five-year-old down the beach.
Yeah. Okay.
We had a great time.
So by building a place and giving little children the opportunity to experience what it feels like to run in the sand before they're all judgmental and thinking they're okay, because the soft sand is like the missing link.
I can believe it.
The missing link. So how big a place would this be? Like, 100 yards by 100 yards, or like a...
No, about like an acre.
Oh, okay. It's a lot of sand.
An acre, you would have a place where they built sandcastles, large sandcastles. You would have a place where you would have a place where King of the Mountain. You'd have a course where people can experience what it feels like to be what we are. We are designed as hunter-gatherers. The blueprint has never changed, and God and his buddies put it together.
Okay.
That's a lot of sand.
It's a lot of sand. I'm curious how you'd keep all that sand clean, because the beach tends to kind of clean itself. It bakes it out with the sun, gets replenished every time you get the high tide, etc. So,
well, when you have it all designed with the water piping and the water flow system and stuff, it would all be washed and raked every day.
Like a giant Zen sand garden, too. I see all sorts of stuff coming from it.
A place where just you can experience the naturalness of what the fabric is. See, we've stifled the body. We don't allow it to really do what it was naturally designed to do. We do other things with it, like basketball or surfing. They're all technique and style. But soft sand or running in the sand is a natural feeling that the fabric needs to experience why it's alive. Because soft sand takes what? Effort. Sex takes effort. And giving birth takes effort.
You're drawing some interesting parallels. But,
and if you get little children and have this built, you've got them at 4 and 5 year olds experience just a natural feeling of what it feels like just to be alive, just to feel the naturalness without an ego, just to feel the cardiovascular and the ability to have the confidence building of a 6 year old, knowing that it can actually run in a van for an hour because you get a stick to run with.
Do you know that a baby can swim up until the age of 3?
Really?
Yeah. Kids can actually naturally have the ability to swim and climb, actually. But I was actually climbing when I was like 3 months old. I was climbing trees.
It's a natural thing.
Anyways,
but if we get you in the sand, it gives you that base, that foundation, the granite, because that gives you the confidence. Then you branch from there and do all the other activities that one would have to do. But the sand will give you confidence. I'm 68 years old, and I run at Lydgate every day for at least 2 hours, gang. And the beach from Lydgate all the way to Radisson Hotel, there is so much beautiful sand down there that everybody should be out there trying to experience what it feels like to be who they really are. And then go to where you think you need to be to make a dollar so you can survive.
All right. Well, sign us up.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, gang. And a joyful Thanksgiving to all my brothers and sisters.
Well, thank you very much for your call.
Accepted.
Have a great Thanksgiving. Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha. So you're listening to 826-7771, and from the broad smorgasbord of calls, you could tell that we are live and uncensored. I think Scott Majors just came into the studio, and we've got a call. Scott's already getting calls happening for us. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air. Eric Cannon hosting the show, and I'm just kind of sitting in the back.
Aloha, caller.
Hi, Eric. The guy that called... and he said that he thought the bluegrass guys were maybe making a little bit light of somebody that may have been injured surfing because of some sand that was shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I like the bluegrass guys, and I didn't feel like they were making light of anything, maybe at the party boat thing, but they were very respectful. I don't even know why I called. That's all I have to say.
You just felt moved.
I felt moved. The Bluegrass guys, I don't listen to them that often, but I really liked their show today. I was driving, and I listened to what they had to say, and I didn't feel they were making jests of anyone getting injured.
They are masters of sarcasm and wit, and they can even use glibness sometimes to subtly get a point across, but I certainly know that they're all very, very good men and a couple of women, so I don't think they would ever do it on purpose to be disrespectful, so it might have just come across wrong.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to say that those guys had an awesome show. I really like them, and, you know, today I really enjoyed their show, and I just thought that they were, I didn't find that they were saying, making light of anyone getting injured. I thought that they, you know, even though they do have a little slight sarcasm here and there, I think they're very clever,
Well, if anyone out there was offended by it, it's good to have another opinion to what actually they may have meant. And I'm
I wish I'd heard the show.
I don't think they can't weigh in.
Yeah.
There's never a...
But anyway, I'm sure there's other issues that are more important than this, so thank you.
Well, we're open to any issues. So anyway, what are your feelings on the Dow and Monsanto trying to overturn Maui's ban, or what's happening in Ferguson? The police officer was found not guilty. The amnesty executive order by our president.
The Monsanto and Dow. I mean, shame on them once again. You know, here the people actually got to vote on this very important issue. And, you know, for them to want to postpone, putting it into action, it's just a breach of trust, you know? I mean, I just don't understand how these companies, they actually got to vote on it, you know, and they got the yes vote passed where they wanted a ban on GMO farming. So I don't think that... Shame on Monsanto for wanting to sue once again, you know. And as far as Ferguson, you know, it's really a shame that the officers, that people get away with killing black men, you know. And I don't know the situation too well. I mean, the guy, did he rob a store, a convenience store? You know, why can't people shoot somebody in the foot where it's not going to kill anybody?
I think there's actually laws for that. If a police officer pulls his gun to shoot, they're supposed to shoot to totally incapacitate. And by the time it's at that point, to try to wound, you know.
A wound. I mean, you know, it seems like if you say to somebody, stop, or I'm going to shoot, can't you just wound them without killing them? You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Scott Majoros would like to weigh in on that.
I was just curious, caller, have you ever been put in a position where you were afraid for your life?
No, I haven't.
So if you were ever in that position, you had a loaded weapon in your hand, it might change your attitude about what you do with that gun if you really thought your life was in danger.
But then again, I don't know if Zimmerman was really afraid for his life when he was told by the police not to go after the guy. You know, and so there's certain situations that happen and...
But why do these issues always come up when it's a black man? Because every day white people get killed and black people kill black people. Why is it only an issue when a white person and a black person are engaged in this type of thing?
Whether it's I just got to say, whether it's black or white, an officer shouldn't be holding a weapon if he doesn't know how to defend himself without it. And he shouldn't have to pull it if he feels scared. I mean,
well, this was a 300-pound man. He wasn't a kid. He was a 300-pound.
Michael Brown?
Yeah, he was a big dude.
6'4", 300 pounds, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it's just very interesting. I think how we kind of negotiate through society comes up through all these court cases like Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, like here with the Brown. I mean, to me, I could tell you, actually, back in college, I was walking down Pacific Garden Mall, and it's actually how Michael Vandiver ended up getting on the show at KKCR. I was actually walking down the road on a lunch study break, and I happened to walk through an officer having a problem with a bunch of homeless people, and I was kicking a hacky sack, and he started yelling at me from 50 feet away. I didn't know he was even talking to me. I wasn't involved, and he came up and started pushing me in my chest, and, you know, I took his hand, and at the time, I was studying Aikido very hardcore, and I didn't mean to, but I kind of flipped his hand around and said, hey, what are you doing? And I was beaten up, maced, leg chained, arm chained. So I've been on that side, and I actually won a court case that took a year and a half. I believe there is radical police violence, and I believe there's actually profiling. It's obvious, but in this particular case, I'm going to say, I've done a lot of research. When a 300-pound human being, it doesn't matter what color skin they are, goes in the window of the cop car, scuffles for the gun, and tries to grab the gun, and the gun is just discharged in the cop car, I think all bets are off. So
nowadays,
you know, I didn't know the facts well enough to be honest with you.
Oh yeah.
I've listened to it on TV and you know, but I didn't know that he was actually in the window of the car.
Well, caller, for you and everybody else listening, you can go online and Google the grand jury testimony of Michael Brown, and it's all there. You can read all the facts.
He wasn't in the car, though.
Yes, he was. He had his body inside the car.
He got into the window.
He got shot outside of the vehicle, though.
Yeah, but the gun was initially discharged because he
inside the car.
Came into the car.
Yeah.
So
maybe just to change the subject a little bit, maybe go to homelessness, because Felicia had on her Facebook page a really brilliant idea, and I forget what the town was, but this one place is making these little homes for homeless people. You know, they're little shelters, and I thought it was brilliant. And for all, you know, for all the homeless that we have, it seems like if you can make this a little village out of even, you don't need a lot in Hawaii, just shelter and maybe a communal toilet or something out of pallets even. There's so much you can do out of pallets. So,
It's such an interesting time because we have our human dignity, which is this weird, hard to quantify value. And on one extreme, absolutely, we should be, you know, finding homes and shelter and food for these people. But on the other hand, I have a suspicious feeling sometimes that there's this whole move to downsize everyone and create this return to serfdom. And that's why I worry about the nanny state. I mean, back to the Ferguson thing, there was everything in leaning in favor of having a grand jury convict this guy because everybody knew that there was going to be rioting and whatever. So for him to be found not guilty by the grand jury says a lot. Because
the physical evidence
had to be radically overwhelming, and yet it doesn't matter. We're still having rioting and burning and, you know, cop cars being destroyed. So I don't know. We are in such an interesting time, and you said it. You didn't know the facts. We all have this visceral reaction to police violence. We see it in the news. You know, I don't know if it's social media has accelerated to the point where we're privy to everything and we never were before, or the militarization of the police forces are contributing to this.
Well, it is the militarization.
It's interesting times, but there's not enough conversation.
They do have vehicles now that are being handed to them that are like bulletproof and you know, different kinds of equipment is being given to the
It might be called MRAPs. I can't.
That's what they're called. Yeah, they're military.
Yeah, they're a SWAT-style tactical assault vehicle that's very hard to get into, and they're also weaponizing drones and on and on. But I think a lot of, you know, I have friends from very extremely conservative to very radically liberal. And a lot of times I think people don't get when you want more and more from the nanny state and entitlements and everything else, you're also ceding your personal sovereignty and your freedom and your ability to be accountable to yourself. Now we get more population. We, by nature, are going to have less and less freedoms because we have to live and work together. But you know, it's a much broader decision, and I just see so many people cut and paste. And you want to talk about Ferguson? I find you're immediately labeled a racist if you're disputing the politically correct and publicly accepted narrative right now, which is this. You know, another black man got shot, and they related to Zimmerman. Totally different situation. And
this young man was a suspect in a strong arm robbery. And he was, you know, if you're a police officer in nowadays, you don't know if this person is high on crack and thinks he's invincible or whatever. You know, there's a lot of things that come into play. But when you're a police officer, you live this violence every single day, you know. And to be afraid for your life and have a gun on your hand. And he, the evidence said, if you read the grand jury testimony, he shot him like five times or shot at him five times. And it wasn't a fatal wound. And then the suspect moved 25 feet closer to the officer after he was shot. That's when the fatal shot was made after that. So there was two blood splatters identifying two separate you know, rounds of fire. So it's a, you know, you'd have to be there and be afraid for your life. I mean, if you're a police officer, how many times has someone reached in your car and fought you for your weapon?
Well, I think
that's after he's already been shot at.
Yeah.
No, this was before. This was before.
So
what's interesting is the whole notion of political correctness. And, you know, so many people are willing to just read a meme on Facebook and go, oh, yeah, bad cops. You know, I mean, I am no fan of police brutality. There are much more obvious situations that it was obvious that brutality was happening. To me, why aren't police all wearing cameras right now? What's the problem with that? So everything's just detailed. But a lot of people are afraid to actually question because there's such power behind the public narrative, and in this case, it's, you know, white cop bad, you know, black person victim. And yes, that stuff is happening, but it doesn't mean it's always happening all the time, forever, everywhere, in every sense. And I think we as individuals are being trained to just Pavlovianly react to these stories, whether it's the extreme religious right, you know, or the Tea Party or the radical liberal left. And you know, I worry more about our ability to get on forums like this and just talk and you know, disagree and not be insulted and go, hey, oh, I didn't.
Well, it's funny because I'm fairly liberal-minded,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like lately I'm more fiscally conservative. You know, like I don't know that I want to give and support all sorts of people that don't work, you know, and they choose not to work because I work hard, you know, but I'd like to see homeless people may be given a chance, you know, with but not everybody's going to accept it because not everybody that's homeless does, you know, some people do work, but it's just hard to find a place to live. I have friends right now that places are for sale that they're living in because they're renters and they're concerned because they can't really find a place to live. It's really hard. And, you know, but anyway, if you build a little place, let's say, for some homeless people, I don't think they should have it for free, but maybe have a communal garden where they work in the garden, and maybe they can do a soup kitchen for other homeless people. I mean, maybe, you know, it can be like a community.
Isn't that what the hostel is, pretty much? I mean,
yeah, like a hostel, exactly. Hmm. You have to get people to work somehow, you know, whether it's working on the land a little bit, growing a little food so that not everything is for free, that they can contribute, and that's what builds your self-esteem.
Well, it seems like there's this narrative of entitlement, too, and that's coming in the face of, you know, maybe the last 50 years of this corporate narrative of, you know, you're a consumer, and you'll get what we give you, and I don't know. It's somehow we are very lost in this country. I think they were, they were waiting to deliver the grand jury testimony hopefully during a snowstorm or when, you know, there's such an element of theater. Like, when was the last time you heard of an Ebola story after the election? It literally stopped the day after the election. You can find it, but it was sensationalized all over. And this stuff happening right now on CNN, MSNBC and everything, I don't know. I'm wondering if it was there were some powers that be that were thinking, hey, maybe this will be the spark that starts the martial law, and then we can, you know, grab the guns and go after the Second Amendment, etc. You don't know anymore. We've really lost trust and faith in our constitutional process and our politicians, etc. So,
well, it's such a two-party system. It's a shame that you're more independent and more Green Party or more libertarians. I mean, it's too bad that there's not more people of different parties involved, that it's just such a two-party system.
I think it's two parties that share the same common objective,
exactly.
To have bigger government. I think as people, we need
I'm kind of liking Rand Paul lately.
Right.
I never was into him before. I mean, and now the fact that, you know, I don't really want to spend our money on war machines, and I don't necessarily think that we should be over in Afghanistan or in the Middle East, and I don't think that, you know, drugs probably, maybe if we decriminalize drugs like they do in other places. I mean, I'm listening to some of the things that he's saying, and I'm kind of agreeing with him in certain areas, you know.
Right. As a society, I think people, what we need to be rejecting is the theory of big, powerful, all in one government, and the trend has been the federal government gets involved in these smaller cases. There's no reason why Eric Holder had to go to Missouri for this. Let them work this out, And but they're constantly taking power away from the counties, the cities, the states. If it were up to us, there would be no federal trial for the GMO
thing. I like to see the counties take care of the counties. And that way, if we make a law, you know, an issue like they did on Maui, then it's a done deal. Now, there's no, you know, getting the state to try and overturn it.
Or the feds, after the state, they could come in, the feds might come in.
Well, and beyond the feds, though, what's happening in Maui should be a great eye-opener because Monsanto and Dow are coming to sue with deep pockets. But if we get the Trans-Pacific Partnership passed and fully through, we're going to completely lose our sovereignty, you know, at the municipality level, the state level, or even the federal level, because the Trans-Pacific Partnership will trump all of that.
And see, what happens is the danger, caller, is that our elected officials are no longer accountable to us. They pass it on. They say, hey, sorry, but this is coming from up above. And when it comes right down to it, we don't really have a say-so in our representative government.
That's a huge danger, and people should be paying attention.
That's right.
You know, and it blows my mind that they're not.
Right.
Hey, I know you know somebody that recently had a little political experience, but I think maybe you should consider it yourself.
You know what? I don't know if I want to sit and look at paperwork for hours upon hours, and it's just the process of which the county does business, and it's probably not just here. It's probably all over. It doesn't interest me. I like going to the meetings, mm-hmm. and I like showing up for issues that are close to my heart. I don't know that I'd want to do it.
You don't know if it's for you.
I don't know if it's for me. You know,
you can still be very productive from the outside, though, if you're engaged.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But more people need to be productive from the outside. More of us need to pay attention. I'm starting to go to my Kilauea Neighborhood Association meetings. They're the first Tuesday of every month. And I find it so enjoyable, you know. And I don't often get there, but when I do, I love it. That's part of being a part of a community and making decisions as a community. And I think that's what I like. I like communities being able to make decisions.
Well, next meeting, there will be nomination for board members of the Kilauea Neighborhood Center for the 2015 year. So.
And a board member is so much more fun than a board member. It's like a special.
Yes.
A board member is very special.
It's fun. You get cookies.
Well, thank you, caller. We've been all over the board. But
speaking of the board, there's another caller we've been waiting
for. Oh, my gosh. Let's take that other caller. Scott.
Bye, caller. Thank you.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, interesting discussion.
Yeah, we'll try to keep it.
Okay, so one good thing about this whole Ferguson thing is it's a microcosm that we can tap into the consciousness of the nation and even the world. And I just think Obama had an opportunity to make a speech to prove that he's the unifying president that he's claimed he's going to be. And instead, man, that speech was just such BS. All that clever double talk. The clever double talk is what really makes me angry about politics.
Whose speech was this?
Obama's speech after the decision.
Okay.
Going up there pretending he's trying to keep the calm and then at the same time underhandedly throwing more fuel into the fire. And it was very cleverly done. He's a great speaker. But it was totally transparent what he was doing.
Well, the day before he was telling the protesters to stay the course.
He did so much. I'm not even going to break it down word by word. But if you go there and you deconstruct that speech, everything was like, yeah, this, but that. And if you listen to the words, he had, 3 months to prepare this speech? This could have been his Gettysburg speech. He could have just hit a home run on this and just brought peace to that area, you know, because people are listening to him. And instead, he did that because he doesn't want, you know, black activists to claim that he's too white, and he doesn't want white people to claim that he's not radical, that he's not strong enough. I mean, I don't even know who this guy is. I really don't. I have no clue. And with all the evidence in this case, somebody there, one of your guests there, didn't know this guy was 300 pounds. A few weeks ago, people were coming in and saying, I saw what happened. He was on his knees holding up his arms. The truth is, this guy was charging him, and he was yelling, "You're such a blank, you won't shoot me." And the word is a five-letter word that starts with P.
Well, it's another word for a kitty cat. We'll just say that.
And he was yelling that while he was coming at him. And this, there had already been shots fired. This is insane. This is like such a slam dunk case of a tragedy where this guy had almost no choice. He had almost no choice. You could, you know, pretend he was the Lone Ranger and, you know, blew out his knees or something. But this is reality. And there was eyewitnesses there who were black, who basically were the witnesses that said he was charging him with his head down like a football player, screaming that phrase to the cop.
Hey, caller, I'm going to put you on hold for one moment. I just got to have to do my...
It's the top of the hour. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea. This is Community Radio 826-7771. It's just after 5 o'clock, Hawaii Soapbox. Eric Cannon hosting. Go ahead, caller. Back to you.
Yeah, you know, I've been raving for a while, but I think you get the message. This was... We're, like, regressing in racial issues. People are taking sides.
Well, it's by design, too, and basically... By even questioning the public narrative, you can be accused of having white privilege or just being white, not understanding. But to me, I'm all for examining police brutality, overzealous use of weapons, militarization of police force, even racial profiling. At the same time, if I jump in a cop car and try to wrestle a police officer's gun out, I don't care what race or sex or gender, nationality, religion, I'm done. That's a contract with society. And so the hands up or hands down, hands up, don't shoot, he already had gotten into the police car and tussled with the officer. And
shots were fired in a struggle.
Shots were fired in a struggle, and then it escalated, et cetera. So, I think there's more theater going on. I wish they would have chosen a different case during the time. From when this happened, there have been two or three other police brutality cases that didn't get near the exposure that were so much more clear. The one where the officer asked the guy to get the black gentleman to get his license in the car at a gas station. The guy went to get his license, and the police officer shot him 5 times. This is actually not a good one because it really did not favor Michael Brown in this, who'd already tried to physically assault the police officer. And, you talk about it, and if you're white, well, you're white, you have white privilege, well, you have no idea. And I'm sorry, I don't buy it. I think we're all getting afraid to discuss, to research, to do more than just cut and paste what we're seeing on our internet memes or our mainstream media's feeding us. So
there are plenty of white people crossing lines and taking the liberal view, and plenty of black people taking the conservative view, for lack of better terms. It's all over the map. But the bottom line is, I really think the atmosphere that Obama is setting is creating a lot of this. It was not like this 10, 20 years ago.
Nope.
With Rodney King, you had a lot of this, but here there was overwhelming evidence that there was police brutality going on there. And still, you don't want to have rioting, but it got out of hand because of that and because of the way it was handled. This case was handled very, very carefully.
Well, it was by design. At one point, Holder actually called for strict prosecution and kind of inferred guilt on the officer very early on before even knowing what happened. And that was meant to inflame. And then you have Al Sharpton jumping in.
But this case was the opposite of rush to judgment. They had a grand jury that was selected before this incident even took place. The grand jury was already in place for, that's the way it works, right? And they took their time and they deliberated for over a month. And they came to this conclusion. So this was the opposite of a rush to judgment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Obama's a constitutional lawyer, and I'm sure he went over that case and all the evidence, 70 hours, 60 witnesses, black eyewitnesses. I'm sure he went over that with a fine-tooth comb. That wasn't enough for him to say something like, to all the protesters, please understand, justice was served here. All the evidence supports this. He didn't go there at all. He just made it sound like, yeah, there's lots of reasons for people to be disappointed, and there's this, and there's that. And he just added fuel to the fire, but at the same time, he did it in a clever way so nobody could go and say, hey, what are you doing? You know, he protected himself the way he always does so that he's not held accountable for anything.
Now there's speculation that the National Guard, who was not involved in last night, they were told to stand by, that they, the governor, Nixon, of the governor of Missouri, was pressured by the White House to not let...
To have the National Guard stand down.
To protect the businesses. And so the victims here are these business owners, many of them minorities.
Most of them were minority-owned businesses that were burnt down.
25 businesses, yeah. Most of them minorities, and they were in a no-win situation. If they showed too much force, they would have said, look at the angry white people, and if there wasn't enough, Al Sharpton has already been applauding the admonition that they wanted the burning to happen and that they let it happen. He's on record in this discussion that they had at a town meeting. This guy says, and they just let this happen. And Al Sharpton got up and started yelling and the crowd screaming. This is like a lynch mob.
Yeah.
Well, interesting times. And, you know, it always brings me back to our state here of Hawaii and the kind of unfinished, unanswered questions we have about, you know, our origins and, you know,
sovereignty.
Our annexation and sovereignty, etc. And, you know, I think we would do well to, you know, constantly keep turning our focus back here and in starting from home. And that's what grassroots is. And, you know, the country's supposed to be a conglomeration of 50 independent states that have sovereign states' rights. And you choose a state that reflects your values and you follow a constitution that is, you know, agreed upon by all. But it's interesting times. I believe we are being trained or motivated or taught to be reactive emotionally instead of, you know, logically evaluate stuff. And there's definitely a place for pure emotion, but there's also a place for logic. And ultimately, you put the two together, you come to the right decision, hopefully. But, you know, I shook my head. Thanking goodness that I wasn't on the radio tonight because Felicia had taken her show back and then she got to go to the mainland for Thanksgiving and asked me to come in. But, you know, I'm surprised people on Kauai and Hawaii don't seem to be that fired up by the Ferguson thing and its implications. And yeah. I think the implications are pretty major.
I asked some people about it and what they thought about it, and no one really seemed to know anything about it. Just walking around Kapaa before having dinner.
It's too far away. I understand that. That's what happens here. And it's easy to fall into that. I'm making it my business to, you know, stay informed as best I can. I'm not a fanatic about these issues. But I just watched this grow. And I grew up in neighborhoods like Ferguson, you know, and that don't have a racial, you know, bone in my body. I just couldn't just survive. I grew up in black neighborhoods, playing on the basketball team and hanging out. Those were all my friends. And you know, you just learn to discriminate who is a good person and who's not. It has nothing to do with color, you know. And these people here, I don't even know what's going on there. I think a lot of these people that are pushing this agenda, they know what the facts are. They know what the logical conclusion of all the evidence is. It's not like they're blind to that, but they've got the sheeple out there that just they're leading, you know, to the slaughter.
Yeah, and then meanwhile, you have an executive order on a temporary amnesty for up to 5 million people and hundreds of thousands of youth coming in. And, you know, that's catering to a whole other segment of race and geographical context. And, it seems like our president wants to be all things to all people, and he's ended up doing none of them, really. So.
Yeah, and it's about getting reelected. That's the bottom line on the whole amnesty thing. The Democrats know they're going to get most of those votes.
Yeah.
And right now the Democrats support them. It's probably going to support them for the next 10, 20 years the way things are going, as long as the agenda and what they're selling continues to sell. And so it's so scary to see all this going on. I mean, this whether we're in Hawaii or another country, I mean, these people are fleeing Mexico for a reason. There is no rule of law there compared to what we have here. And the rule of law we have here is being deteriorated, and it's a slow process. You know, it's been happening for a long time.
We've got some other calls calling in, so I want to thank you for your provocative thought, and we'll just see what unfolds.
Okay, I'll be listening. Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you for calling. Aloha. Aloha, you are on the air.
All right, thanks. The Ferguson thing, when it broke and all this started happening, I was leaning on to the side of the Michael Brown. just because of the history of black police violence, brutality towards blacks in general seems to be a
right
established fact. But then came the videotape of this Michael Brown guy robbing that store, and either slapping or hitting or pushing down somebody there, and walking out with the spoils from that store. So that changed my thinking about it a bit, and you know, so I've been following it, and I encourage anybody who's interested. There's a site, a newspaper called the Daily Mail out of England.
Oh, UK Daily Mail, yeah.
Yes, the UK Daily Mail, and their coverage of stuff from around the entire world is phenomenal. In my mind, they cover, they're even better than Huffington Post. So they've had tons of stuff about the Michael Brown case. And this morning, they had they printed the transcript of the questioning by, I think it was an assistant prosecuting attorney, of the officer. What's his name? Darryl Wilson?
Yeah.
Yeah. They printed the transcript from the grand jury proceedings. And after I read that transcript, I swung the other way. I feel comfortable now being on the side of that police officer. He came from someplace else and was driving down the street. He saw these two black guys walking down the middle of the street in the yellow line, and they were forcing cars to come to a stop because of their positioning, and they were holding, you know, they were disrupting traffic walking down the center of the street. So he pulls up to them and says, you know, what are you doing on the street? Can you walk on the sidewalk? And Michael Brown cursed at him in the most graphic of terms, and said, "I'm just going over there." And he continued walking on down the street in the middle of the street. And so the cop backed up his vehicle and kind of like blocked him and said, "Would you please get off the middle of the road and go onto the sidewalk?" And it was just about that time that, again, the guy started cursing him, and he saw in his hands, he saw the stolen goods in his hand.
A pack of cigarillos.
He goes, "Oh my God, these are the two guys that I heard about on the radio stealing from that store around the corners." So he said something like, "You know, get down on the sidewalk and put your hands behind yourself, blah blah blah." And the guy attacked him and he said, "You know," he says, "you're too much of a pussy to shoot me." And he attacked him. And he reached inside the car and grabbed the officer's gun while the officer was trying to get the gun. And there was a struggle where the officer was fearing for his life. And then he could feel the guy trying to get his finger into the trigger guard.
Yeah, and I believe the gun was discharged in the car.
No, not yet.
Not yet in the car?
No, not yet. While they were struggling, and so he said something like, "You have to read the transcript. It's very, very detailed."
Detailed, yeah.
What, you know, what the guy could remember, he said, and what he couldn't remember, he said what he couldn't remember. It was unclear. He said it was unclear. It was very, very detailed. But then a shot did go off in the car, which surprised the two of them, and then further struggles ensued, and he shot again. And the whole thing unfolds through the words of the officer. Now, you know, you can make an argument that the officer might be embellishing the story for his favor. But then we have black witnesses that support the officer's testimony. So.
All right, well, I'd like to comment on that if I can.
Pardon?
I'd like to comment if I can.
That's Eric.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
So I'm reading also... let's see what the officer was saying that had happened there, and he was saying when he pulled up, they were walking across the street, and that's when he had told them if they could walk on the sidewalk, and that's when Michael Brown told back the officer we're already at our destination or whatever what he said exactly. That's when the officer then again told them to get onto the sidewalk, and then that's when he said that he swore at him, and that's when the officer pulled over, and then this is where he says he was trying to get out of the car, and then Michael Brown rushed him.
Right. He rushed him.
Rushed him. So
inside the car and tried to get his weapon.
Does that really sound likely? I'm sorry, come on. Really, think. Does that really sound likely that someone that gets yelled at by a cop is going to swear back at them and then rush them for their weapon?
Eric, there were witnesses.
I know. Yeah. Oh, I know there were witnesses. I know.
The reason I believe this was seeing the video of this Michael Brown guy at doing the robbery inside that store. And his physical action, he was, as Bill Maher said, a thug. A big, tall, 300-pound thug who thought that he could just take what he wanted and walk away with it and just own the rest of the world.
I don't believe Michael Brown was actually proven to be in that robbery. There was just
you watch the video and you see him striking the person inside the store before leaving the store.
So that was proven to be Michael Brown then.
Yeah, and Eric, the way this thing developed was this officer got a call that there was a strong arm robbery, and they gave a description of
two large black males.
No, it was more detailed than that.
Black shirt.
It was one large black male and one smaller black male.
Right.
Red cap.
The small one was wearing a black shirt.
Right.
And the big one was dressed in a certain way.
And that's how, you know, when he saw him, he called for backup, too. So if you go on reading through the transcripts, you'll see that he did call for backup, but this all was started and was over within 90 seconds.
Well, I want to jump in here because this is the bigger issue. Here's Eric. I've known Eric for 4 years now, and you said, how likely is that? And yet the transcripts are there, the videos are there. So what really this calls attention to me to is there is this massive amount of distrust for our police force across the board. There's Eric. You're not even from there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've experienced police brutality in any way. I think you had one trip to L.A. where you were out of money and something happened. But, I mean, there the transcripts there, the videos there, the grand jury testimony, and still you have this feeling of suspicion or doubt or you're, mm-hmm. you said, how likely is that? But that stuff's already proven. So the bigger story is why are so many people in this country willing to just take the side of Michael Brown and just assume that here's just another thing? And you know what? It might even be the majority of the time that there's police brutality, but in this specific case it wasn't. But something bigger is happening. There's a narrative that is shared by so many people that there's a complete lack of distrust in the system, in police, in the militarization, all the way back to Monsanto and Dow suing Maui County that legally voted to have a ban on GMO farming. What is going on?
I can be completely wrong, but I'm sorry. I just don't take the side of the police officer. And, you know, if this is going to ensue riots from coast to coast, from New York to L.A. and blow up Missouri with riots, and as I'm hearing from most of the riots, the very first thing that's busted in is McDonald's windows and other big corporations, the first things they attack is these big businesses. All I want to say is, if that's really going to happen, I mean, I would pay a lot of money to pay some witnesses off if I can to just say something. I'm not saying that they all did, but I'm just saying, you know, if you could pay a witness $5,000.
Let the caller respond to that, because that's okay. I think he got your point. Go ahead, caller.
You can have it both ways. You can have everybody around the country rioting and demonstrating, and you can have a police officer that acted within the law. Because the problems in Ferguson appear to be systemic. You've got a majority, a majorly white police force policing a majorly black area. And you've got the history of blacks being considered less than human for well over 200 years. And the racism is still there, and it's still part of everyday life, whether you're going to try and get a loan from a bank, or whether you walk into a store wearing a hoodie, walk down the street wearing a hoodie. you're gonna get typecast. So the problems in Ferguson are systemic, and it's not only Ferguson. Ferguson is like a microcosm of what's happening all over the country. So you can have a police officer who was in genuine fear of his life and ended up killing this guy who, from all accounts, attacked him first and tried to kill him. And you can have that, and you can have people protesting the generalized injustice of black people all around America.
And the difficulty is that requires a nuance and an ability to separate issues. You could say that systemically what we're looking at in Ferguson is happening across the country, but that's not exactly what happened in Ferguson, as determined by the grand jury.
Right. So the guy was on TV, the district, the prosecuting attorney who gave the press conference, and he said that yes, all of this stuff it happened is a tragedy, and on both sides of the aisle it's a tragedy, but we are at a unique point in time where we can work together and make this tragedy benefit us in the future. We can work on the systemic problems. We can try to heal together, and we can make this place a better place if we keep our, you know, eye on the nuances and on the real story that's going on.
Right.
So, but you know, again, it's mixed in with the entire country and the history of our nation. It's such a deep wound.
Go ahead, Scott.
I'd like to say something, caller, because, you know, when people say, and right or wrong, they say, oh, we have this deep prejudice here in America. We have this 200 years or 100 years of history. I'd like to say America freed the slaves. Our citizens fought and died brother against brother to free the slaves. We have a black president. We have black corporate presidents. We have many black millionaires and billionaires, and I just don't see us being as prejudiced as people would like us to believe. I think we have a prejudice against bullies and people of color that think that they're entitled to tell a police officer to, you know, go blow off. I think a lot of people are offended by that, and it doesn't matter what your color of your skin is. It's if your attitude and the way the content of your character is such that people don't like that. And so I think black people have more opportunity in America than they ever had. It's just a matter of reaching out there and getting it. And I don't know. I hate to think that all of us should feel guilty because we live in a racist nation when we just have a black, you know, the black community is only 17% of our nation's population. And yet we have a black president. What does that say about prejudice? Right. And
but you know, if blacks are 70% of the population, then go ahead and look at the number of blacks that are in prison for the most trivial of crimes.
Is it just blacks? Is it poor whites also?
You know what? I don't want to get into the argument of I'm not feeling guilty about blacks or Latinos or Irish or Italians or whoever came here either freely or by force. I don't care. But I do sincerely believe that the people of color in general are have a harder time of it because of racism and bigotry, and it's much harder for them to get on the other side of the ball than it is for people of let's say non-color.
And they
I'm not making excuses.
But they bear no responsibility at all for it. It's all somebody else's fault.
I am not saying that. I am not saying that they don't bear responsibility. Of course they do. All I'm saying is that this thing that happened in Ferguson is a long, long simmering pot.
Mm.
This
you
pot
know,
has
they
simmered
had the,
for a really long time.
They had the police chief of St. Louis St. Louis, Missouri, on television. I forget what program. It might have even been on the internet. He was interviewed, and he said, "Hey, 80% of our murders are black on black."
Yes.
80% of our murders are black on black.
Yes.
So a murder is a murder. Someone's dead.
Yes.
There's no black or white there. It's just we have a dead person. So what does that
agree.
Mean?
I agree. And Rudy Giuliani just said that it's blacks killing blacks, and that's why they have to. That's why there has to be white policemen, because it's blacks killing blacks. And he drew a firestorm for those comments. He drew an absolute firestorm for those comments, but. The St. Louis guy said the same thing in a different way, and he didn't draw a firestorm for the comments.
Right. I don't think he said you have to have white police officers. He just basically stated the fact in his jurisdiction that 80% of the murders were black on black.
Yeah. And Giuliani did go in that direction by saying that he basically said the same thing. The problem is not cops killing blacks. It's blacks killing blacks. That's what he said.
Well, there's a couple problems. And on top of all this, I think what we're seeing is the entire country has a feeling of distrust. They don't know they're going to get a fair shake with a police officer anymore. And there's the blue code. There's, you know, covering for each other. And a lot of these death by policemen have been clearly documented on video, and the police end up walking away with no responsibility whatsoever. On the other side, in New York, you had the state Supreme Court rule that they could put maximum IQ limitations on police officer recruits. I don't know if we followed that in the show about 2 years ago. They said you can be refused from joining by having too high of an IQ. My question is, from this thing with the Ferguson, why don't we have the technology, why don't we have police officers wearing cameras and recording everything all the time?
I heard on the radio, I think it was on NPR, they interviewed one of the top law enforcement guys in Israel, where they have, you know, their unique set of problems there with the Palestinians and to a lesser degree with Arabs. And he said that they go through this. There's a step by step by step by step by step by step. Because one of the things they talked about was that kid getting killed for having a BB gun in his hand.
Yeah.
And so he said when they respond to a trouble, step one, you speak first. You know, step two, you ascertain, is that a real gun or is that a toy gun? Step three, you do this. Step four, you do that. Step five, maybe you pull your gun out of your holster. Step six, you fire a shot into the air. You give a warning, you fire a shot into the air. Step seven, maybe you try to shoot at the person's legs. And finally, if all else fails and that person is bound and determined to come and kill you, then you can shoot at the person's torso. So he laid out this whole scenario, which on paper and in practice over there sounds pretty good. But what do you do when you've got this gigantic person physically attack you through the window of your vehicle and trying to wrestle your gun away from you?
You go immediately to step six.
you go to step seven. You know, anyway, thanks for the time. One thing that this is doing is opening up the discussion around America. So, you know, I really hope that good stuff comes out of this We all live in a more safer and a more just world. So anyway,
right.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're here for, just to open the phone lines up. You got any more calls, Scott?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Thanks.
Hello, you are on the air.
Okay, that was really good. I was listening to you on my phone. I agree.
Is there any way you could maybe hold your phone farther back? You're very muffled. I apologize for interrupting you.
Is this better?
That's better. Thank you.
Okay. I was listening to you guys too, waiting to talk. So, that was interesting. I think, I've been following the Ferguson thing too, because it is a powder keg that we've created in our society. And, you know, I've traveled enough to see how other societies are, and we're very fortunate to where we are at. I mean, you know, everybody should just give thanks to where we're at, technology-wise, spirituality, and everything. I mean, but when it comes down to it, I think education is the most important thing. I wish that, you know, the whole society could be well-educated and more freedom and abundance. It seems like we have so much abundance. You know, I myself work my whole life. You know, I'm 56 years old. And then I see so much, and it's like, wow. And then it's like we still continue to procreate, you know. It's like, and then there's so many that have and have not. I mean, I've said this before, you know, I mean, nature has given so much to us. I mean, my avocado tree just never stopped giving avocados since I bought this house 14 years ago. Every year, and then we went through a recession, all this, and it's just, it never paid attention to that. Now I'm worried about GMO. And then I'm worried about our society. I worry about the police here, the police force on this island. You know, I mean, I have a difficult time just getting a ticket. It's just really ridiculous. You know, I got stopped in Poipu, for instance, for going around a car. There was no other car stopped at the stop sign. So I went around him because I figured he was on the cell phone, and then the cop was probably didn't have anything to do, and he pulled me over, and he said, what was that all about? I said, why are you pulling me over? That guy was on his cell phone. Yeah, it just boils down to, I just wish we would treat each other better. And, you know, I meditate myself. And, you know, to deal with things calmly and look inside yourself first before you have any judgment. And also, that is, you know, we're very fortunate, you know, and sovereignty is a good thing. You know, I listen to the Dalai Lama. He doesn't have a country. Well, he's the most calmest guy in the world. You know, he lost his country when he was a young man. And he's still thriving and still seeking peace. I just, you know, there's so many things to talk about. You know, I get excited when you get on this phone and get to talk on air, and you guys are so great. You're good listeners. And, yeah, it's a difficult time. That's why I moved away from, you know, I experienced the cities and, you know, traveling. And I'm so glad I don't live in the city, but now I live in this island, and more people are from the cities are moving here. It just boggles my mind that it's coming here. And the homeless is like a microcosm of everything I ever seen traveling, and it's like, wow, it's pretty scary. You know, I mean, you know, there's robberies in my neighborhood now, and you know, I don't know how to deal with it. I still have my door unlocked, and thank God that nobody's touched my stuff. But I've done that forever. But I used to leave my keys in my car, and I remember now I don't. You know, I lock everything, even when I go to any market.
Yeah,
or it's just, you know, it's just signs of the times, and you know, I'm getting older, but you know, I just like to say the wise things. You know, it's just, it's so true. You know, if we look inside ourselves, meditate, do, you know, just give some time out from the society. You know, I really believe there could be some changes within all of us. You know, even the Ferguson thing, you know, all those, you know, it's just sad that, you know, as humanity, you know, I see things, you know, going on a downhill trend, and I just want it to get better. And you know, yeah. Materialism is just overwhelming. You know, it's like I'd like to just downsize and slow down a little bit. Like, work 3 days a week, the rest of the four, educate yourself and work on your garden or whatever. Put some solar panels up.
We're about to experience such major changes with the country club coming into the North Shore. And $300,000 membership and $30,000 a year cost, and $2 million lots there, the Zuckerberg purchase. And if we don't pay attention and find common ground, you know, there's another group of people on the planet, and they don't really care about black or white or religious or conservative.
Oh, no.
It's money and power. And, you know, I watched the whole GMO thing be brilliantly turned into a North versus West, North Shore, West Shore, Howley, local, rich, poor. And it was brilliant because these propaganda people that are just paid, they don't care. They just work for whoever's the highest bidder.
No.
They'll devise a beautiful thing where we are divided and conquered, as we have been since the beginning of time. And we have enough food, we have enough space to meditate, and we have enough time to find our personal peace. So I hear what you're saying, that, you know, but boy, we got to get on the same page with our neighborhood and community and island government.
Well, I think, you know, nature will clean things up. We just forget where everything we have comes from this planet. You know, everything that I love, guitars, surfboards, everything. It's just, nothing comes from outer space.
Right.
Everything is made here.
Yeah.
And we just forget that our wealth is from this planet. If we don't take care of it, we're going to lose it. We're going to lose ourselves. You know, we're part of it. And maybe we'll go back to the great soup that we can regenerate.
The primordial ooze, yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like we're just in such a junior high school type of thing, you know.
Yeah.
It just boggles my mind sometimes. And, you know, I don't see colors anymore. I want to just deal with intelligence, you know, more intelligent, giving people peace. You know, it sounds probably corny to a lot of people, but, you know, that's the reality. I know people that have a lot of money, but they don't seem very happy.
Hey, Carlos.
Oh, go ahead.
You had mentioned the purchase of the Princeville Plateau. And
yeah.
Because that's a local issue. I'm surprised that it didn't come up during the show. I was wondering, caller, have you been...
I don't even know about that? I don't even know about that. I'm too busy working. You know, that's the whole thing. They keep us busy working, and then they feed us fodder of the news that we're not interested in.
Well, Carlos, you know more about it. Why don't you tell the listeners that aren't aware?
I don't really know the specifics, but it was about $300 million. Jeff Stone sold a piece of property that included the tavern. They'll be shutting down. They're going to have
They're
tearing it down. It's going to be a private country club that extends all the way to the ocean. It's going to be $2 million minimum lot cost, $300,000 to join the country club, but you can't join unless you own the lots. And you know that's going to come with all the serfs that are needed to maintain and work on the property. But where do they go live as the cost of living skyrockets? So it's really interesting. But I just, beyond everything, I think the smart thing that they do, and I really believe there is a they, is they divide and conquer. They play us on our own passions and fears and everything else. You know, we're not citizens anymore. We're consumers. You know, there's consumer sentiment. There's not citizen sentiment. Have you heard that on the news? It's consumer sentiment.
You know what I think, and again, this goes back to smaller government and having your elected officials accountable directly to the voters. But what I see, and what's so frustrating and creates so much anxiety for me, is that we can't just live our lives on our own anymore. We got to pay a little extra for this and a little extra for that. And next thing you know, we're slaves. We are literally slaves.
Right.
And in some communities, if you're homeless, it's now illegal to be homeless. Even if you own your property, you can't have a tent for
your
uncles
Florida,
and aunties to live
in certain
on your
areas
property.
You cannot be off the grid.
Right.
You have to participate in the grid electric and grid water.
Right. And so the greater good comes in the play, where all of these bureaucrats can be absolutely irresponsible managers of our resources and our money, and we're held accountable for their mistakes. And that's so frustrating, and so, because we can't just live our own lives anymore. We have to finance their mistakes. And that's
private. You're trying to privatize our island.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it comes back down to, I become a slave again, so...
And as far as this millionaires and billionaires club, Carlos, I'll bet you it never comes to pass. I don't see that Kauai has the amenities that will attract these people with this kind of money. They're going
to
be bored.
There is a flight to the U.S., and there is a flight to turn their U.S. dollars that they consider more and more worthless into U.S. real estate or hard goods. And so, but on the other side, in agreement with what you're saying, we have the A and B project off of Kukuiula, that is still largely not sold out.
Unspoken for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and it's not the first time that Asian money has come in. Japan came in.
Yeah.
Japan owned the Princeville property. Japanese
Suntory, I think it was.
Yeah, years ago. So I don't know that it's ever going to come to pass. I think that, we have to keep an eye on it, but I'd rather see our energy focus on this GMO thing.
Well, I love what you said, meditation caller.
I wanted to bring that up again.
Personal exploration,
it's important. Just from my experience, it's the only thing in surfing, but I don't want to give that secret out.
It's out already.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, that's just, that's how I am. But tell you what, the Fukushima thing's not over, too. I'm just amazing. It's just amazing that, they've covered that up, too. I have friends that are Japanese nationals out here, and they said their food is getting poisoned. People are moving to the south of Japan as I speak. You know, I mean, just trying to exodus certain areas because of the food poisoning there and water poisoning because of the radiation and the leaks. You know, and it's just amazing. They just had an earthquake.
I was just in Japan, and I can tell you it is pretty packed over there. So for a large mass of people to be moving is not going to be easy.
No, it's not going to be easy, but my friends are staying here, and they've been here for, you know, one of them's been here for a very, very, very long time. They're traveling back and forth, but he doesn't want to go back. It's very scary for them. And they want to turn on another nuclear power plant, and it's just like, you know, they're messing with the whole world. You know, didn't we learn from these things?
But we're messing with the world because we're not responding. You have things like an internet tax in Europe, and you get 500,000 people out in the streets, and our mainstream media won't show it. But we have our rioting in Ferguson. But as far as things coming down from the government, we barely go out in the streets. Our government is no longer afraid of us. They've forgotten that they serve us. They're our employees, and shame on us for that. We do have a couple other calls before the end of the show.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
I love the open, rambling conversation today. So whatever's on your mind. What's up next? Got another caller?
Here we go.
Hello?
There. Yes.
Well, I actually came in. I started listening to the show when you guys were talking about racism in America. I wanted to comment on that. And also, too, I did identify with the last caller in the sense that he feels that meditation is a balancing point. I guess what I wanted to talk about with Ted Dillon, I'm going to be on the. I got to take a call for you. Yeah. Okay. I think that I wanted to point out was something that has been brought up in the black community, but it's been shut down. It was actually Bill Cosby who, you know, brought it up to black people, and he was chastised for it. And he was talking just about the responsibility of parents. You have a culture that they don't have role models. And there's a business of women having babies and being supported by the government by the number of babies that they have. So when you have children that are growing up in communities without positive role models, they do have role models, but they're not positive role models for the most part, that quantifies. So, and anger builds. So yeah. When you have people that are, you know, that just aren't raised with, you know, good morals and good values. And I'm not discounting a whole population, but I think it's fact that you can look up and show that there's a lot of fatherless children and fathers that are fathering multiple children with multiple women, and they're not teaching these children. And one of the things that I think is needed is a basic civics lesson, because if you look at like the police, you know, in Ferguson, you'll hear in the impoverished communities that they say, hey, you know, we don't get the, you know, a good police department, or we don't get a good fire department, or we don't get the good, you know, legal representation as far as public defenders. And my government's doing this, and my government's doing that. I don't know that these people understand that the government, the money, comes from the people. The idea is that you go out and you contribute to society, and then government takes initially a small piece of that to help maintain and provide public services. So when you go to the wealthier communities, yes, they have better libraries, if they have, you know, as opposed to low libraries. They have better police departments. They have better fire departments because civics is actually working there. People are contributing to that society. So when you grow up thinking that the government's against you because they're not providing, no one's there to teach you how to help your neighbor or take care of your family, what else do you think is going to come out of that?
Well, that's very well put. And that's, you're talking about personal accountability and personal responsibility, which leads to personal sovereignty, true sovereignty. And that reminds me of Butch Kekahu. The Kekahu Foundation is the umbrella organization for KKCR, and Butch was very active in the Hawaiian sovereignty movement, and toward the end of his life, and I hope this is no disrespect, but I had him on the air, and he said, you know, I'm looking even beyond the Hawaiian sovereignty movement to personal sovereignty, and that is the personal responsibility we have with our created life, our creator, you know, our accountability, and how we fit in. And you know, it just comes back to that. But I think by design, we are trained through the values we see on television and movies and media, et cetera. Everything's kind of falling apart. And at some point, what's our responsibility? I think that's what you're saying, too. You want a good police force, go build one. You know, go participate. Go be involved in your civics locally, et cetera. So, I don't know.
And you know what? This is something, and you can tell me if it's, you know, relative or not, but and it's kind of humorous. It's just someone had forwarded on a spoof, and it was pranks gone wrong. And it was, you know, a bunch of guys doing little pranks. Where one guy was selling, you know, fake guns, and other guy was going up and asking, you know, kind of almost provoking people. And he was doing it in different neighborhoods. And what was interesting was when he was in the black neighborhood, the level of aggression that he was met with was, I mean, he got punched a few times. I couldn't even believe that this guy was doing these pranks, because he was literally getting, you know, punched and pushed. And he said to this one guy, hey, you guys looking for a gun? And the guy's like, I got one, and pulled one out of his thing. And the guy was like, well, hey, I'm kidding. You know, the kid had a gun in sweats, you know, just a loaded gun. And that goes back to, you know, these guys are growing up angry. They're not being taught, you know, by any good role model. So the level of aggression and the time, you know, the reaction on it, you know, comes out. I was listening to a lot of people, and I really haven't watched the Ferguson thing that much. In fact, I don't even have cable anymore. I kind of read my news on, you know, online. But once again, it was somebody on, you know, external. Why are they, you know, doing this to us? And the thaw in the back, and I think when you really boil a lot of things down, life can be simple, and solutions can be simple if safe.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't want to face things. They don't want to start with day one. And, you know, you mentioned accountability, which I agree with. The caller before, I really liked that he mentioned meditation, because someone gifted me the practice of meditation a few years ago. And I've adopted that into my lifestyle. And what's nice about that is that when you are able to come from within, you're able to become less reactionary and know that, you know, even if someone's directing this at me, I don't have to take the bait. I can,
right,
you know, stay on my side of the street, and, you know, if they want to be upset, they can. And it also allows you to have, you know, more capacity, you know, for compassion to, you know, help maybe somebody who's, you know, not as fortunate. And I really wish that was something that was taught.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it should be core, like starting in kindergarten or before. Hey, we've got a couple more calls, and we're at the end of the show, so I want to give you a chance to wrap up your thoughts into a pretty package. But you've covered a lot of stuff I like, so.
My thoughts are that I'm not a guy that calls into the radio.
Okay.
I've called into your show twice in the last about 4 or 5 weeks because of the intellectual blog that I hear in my car. It prompts me to get involved, and I think that's wonderful. I think what you're doing is wonderful, and I like the fact that people can call in without raising their voices and have an intellectual conversation, which is needed. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, caller. Real quick, before Eric's got a quick announcement about a Thanksgiving feast that's open to the public.
All right, so there is a Thanksgiving feast that is open to the public. To show our appreciation, Anaho Community Park, is that pronounced right, is offering a free community Thanksgiving dinner. Your patronage and support make this community experience possible. So mahalo. This will be at the Kauai Mini Golf, so on the left side of the highway. I'm sure most of you guys have seen it, but that'll be on the 27th at 4 p.m. So come and enjoy this Thanksgiving feast. But Anaho Community Park and Kauai Mini Golf Botanical Gardens.
All right, and just to remind you, coming up next, Jazz with John and Scott. I think you have a caller
we have
online.
Recall, so we. Need
okay,
to
we're going to do a minute and a half to we'll 2 minutes fire. Each. It's going to
okay.
go fast. So
go. You are on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, my God. All I get is a minute and a half after I waited half an hour on my phone, almost dead.
No,
well, we have
seven,
the
7 minutes.
We have the paid line.
Only gets a minute and a half.
You waited 8 minutes.
So I get 10 minutes.
Waited 8 minutes. Call earlier next
You're
week.
You're wasting your minutes there.
I've been calling for half an hour since the Alabama was going on for diabetes.
Hey, you know, I wasn't on the phone today, and that's the reason why the problems are today.
Scott out. Go ahead, Matt. What's on your mind?
First of all, I come from a mom who was a single mom who worked hard, and I am nowhere, nothing like that guy said, first of all. Second of all, I want to point out that I'm white, and when I travel to the United States and the white people immediately realize I'm not white like them, they are prejudiced to me. So you guys are all living in a bubble. Okay? The world is racist. Right now, the only difference is it's not aggressive, it's passive-aggressive racism. That's the difference. Back in the Jim Crow day, they just lynched you. That was aggressive. Now, they do other things. The world is racist, you guys. I'm sorry.
Anyone here disagreed with you, so you might have misheard it.
No. The guy was over there saying, one of you guys on the radio came out and said, we have a black president and only 17%. And all. I mean, that's how long I've been waiting on the radio. I forgot my arguments because I was waiting for days.
No, it's crazy. The world is racist. I went to Japan and everyone loved me.
Just because a black president sits in a chair does not mean there's racist or no racism gone. All of that is ridiculous. And the other thing I wanted to talk about these Ferguson turkeys is that, for one, anybody coming back from a war zone should be a medic, a fireman, or some kind of civil position before they're allotted to be policemen.
Thank you.
They need to decompress coming out of the war zone, first of all. Second of all, what happened to... why? I'm a fighter. My daughter is a fighter. My daughter can handle... my daughter is only like 54 pounds, and she can handle somebody who's not trained twice her weight and twice her age. So why couldn't a cop handle this little 18-year-old boy? I don't care how big he is. If you train, you train.
Yep.
Listen, the ridiculous argument that he had to go from step one to six and blah, guy, is ridiculous. If you cannot control one little young, I don't care how big he is, I'm small, but I fought way bigger guys. In fact, the hardest fight for me are the guys my own size. The problem right now is that we're so militarized. And we should follow in the Israeli playbook for all this stuff. Like I referenced to some Israel handbook, that's ridiculous. They're the worst guys. They're the guys that gave us this playbook that we're following now.
You know, I agree with you completely, caller, but we got two more callers to finish up before the end of the show.
Wait.
You got 30 more seconds. 30 more seconds.
All this time. Now you're going to cut me off.
I got two more people that have been waiting just as long.
This is biased. You guys let the other guys ramble on. I'm going to hang up then. Bye.
No, come on.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Stephanie?
Yep.
Okay, so I want you, the caller... who talked about poor black women having children, to understand the concept of systematic racism, to create laws where a poor, underprivileged black male is put in jail for having a marijuana stick for years and years, okay? Those are laws that were created in the 70s and 80s, who are young black males who are still in jail for those laws, were pulled out of the inner cities, their jobs, no jobs in the inner cities, where the mothers with young children, that's all there were. So those young men are no longer in the inner cities. They have no jobs in the inner cities. They have no role models because they have no jobs in the inner cities. And so that was systematically done to create poverty, to create ghettos, so that to divide and conquer the black community, so that the people who could move to the suburbs, so they can point fingers at the poor blacks in the inner cities and say, if you just pick yourself up by the bootstraps and stop collecting welfare and be like us, then you can live the American dream, you poor black people. That's not the way it should run. We are all in this together, and it's systematically done so that we can point the fingers and we have somebody to blame. And that's the way it should be done. Thank you so much.
Hey, caller.
I guess she's gone.
Yes, I'm here.
I was just going to ask you, if that's true, and yes. It probably is to a certain extent, but the part that confuses me is how hundreds of thousands of immigrants could come here from Vietnam and Cambodia,
you know,
and Mexico.
Okay.
With
because,
nothing.
You know what? Because Americans need somebody to point the finger at. There's always, because if it's not somebody in Israel, if it's not somebody with a turban on their head, if it's not somebody who crosses the border from Mexico, we always need somebody to point the finger at. If it's not somebody in Ferguson, Missouri, it's going to be somebody next week in Iraq.
All right, if I may finish my comments.
Go ahead. Still
need to get that last caller on.
Go ahead.
No, we don't have any more. But the part that confused me is that, like, we have so many of these people that come over with nothing but the shirt on their back, and for decades they come over from Ireland, from Italy, from, like I said, Vietnam, from China. Do you know how many Chinese slaves got shanghaied over to the United States?
Honey, I know that's the truth, but blacks have always been a scapegoat, and we always will be the scapegoat.
Why is it that the Chinese
need somebody to blame, and blacks will always be the ones to blame. We always need somebody to blame.
Okay, we're just about time, but I want to jump in and ask you this question. If I can jump in, it's a little confusing today.
Chinese are not, because they have somewhere to go. They have a family to go home to. We don't have
okay, let me. This is Carlos,
okay.
And
Eric
is running the board. Scott's running the phone. I'm over here just sitting on the edge. But I want to ask you this, because here's the question: how do we go forward? We're like walking out of the forest from the middle of the forest. How, like, honestly, we literally cannot go back and fix the past. The Hawaiians had slaves. American Indians had slaves. Every culture on earth has done terrible things, winners and losers. So from this point, how do we move forward? Some people are calling for African Americans right now in politics to be actually given a second set of standards, so they get easier penalties in school. They're let off the hook. This is all, it's like the essence of affirmative action. But let me ask you, hold on. How do you see us moving forward? I just said it.
We can't blame the victim. We can't.
So not blaming the victim. Okay.
It is 6 o'clock, you guys. I'm sorry, but I don't want to cut into somebody else's great show. So
the good calls come right at the end. And Matt, I'm sorry you were on hold over there. I didn't see that light buzzing. But we'll Felicia will be back next week. Thankfully for a lot of you, and Eric running the board, Scott on the phone coming in, and myself. Just
thank you, Carlos.
Felicia, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Hope to hear from you next week.
We'll see you next week. Jazz with John.
Aloha, Jazz with John.
And let's listen to the council report.
Report for the week of November 24th. Apparently, the council will be celebrating Thanksgiving this week as